Hello, I'm Lucas Kitchen, and this is the Free Grace International Podcast. Now, normally I have friends along for the ride with me, co-hosts, if you will, but today I wanted to do something solo because I'm talking about something that is very exciting to me, and that is the Artemis campaign of missions happening right now. So in the last few days, I've gone out and looked up at the moon, and I've thought about these four astronauts who are on the Artemis II mission. They launched a few days ago on April 1st, which felt like a big April Fool's that we're going back to the moon on April 1st, but they launched on April 1st, and it's a 10-day mission, so still a few more days before they splash down in the ocean and return to Earth. But while they're there, I've had this experience a number of times of just looking at the moon and thinking, well, we've got people there right now, you know, not on the moon, but orbiting the moon, heading towards the moon, now coming back from the moon. And it's just, it's surreal. It's surreal to be living in a moment in history where we're doing this thing again, and we're doing it different than the Apollo missions. So that's what I want to talk about today, but I want to take a specific angle on it, a faith-related angle, and you may be surprised at what we have to talk about in this episode. But before we do that, I want to just give some basic information on the mission so you have a general sense of what is going on. So on April 1st, my family and I, we often watch rocket launches. It's just one of the things that we like to do. And so we watched the rocket launch live. It was about at dinner time, so we were sitting there. We postponed dinner, actually, to watch it. And I find myself often in these rocket launches actually being emotional, you know, feeling emotional and tearing up a little bit if it's a pretty monumental one. And this one is. And so the four astronauts, you know, they climbed on top of that huge candle and lit it. And they started climbing into the sky at, you know, thousands of miles an hour. And so that was April 1st. So on April 6th, there's just some basic info here. On April 6th, the crew broke the record for the farthest distance ever traveled in space. Well, at least that we're aware of. It's, I don't know what else that would include that we're not aware of, but they traveled, let's see, 252,760 miles, which surpasses the previous record, which was held by Apollo 13. Apollo 13 was that moon mission that went awry, and they had to scramble to figure out how to get back home safely. So they broke that record on this flight. I think it was broken at the on the far side of the moon when they were out of communication, actually, because when they go around the backside of the moon relative to Earth, the communication cuts out for about 40 minutes, and they can't talk to Earth at all. And so they're kind of on their own. And so during that period, while they're back there, they broke that record, which is pretty exciting. So the mission goal, you say, well, we've been to the moon. Why are we going again? Well, the goal is to eventually do surface landings, to land on the moon again. And this mission, Artemis II, that's going on right now, is kind of a shakedown cruise, I guess you could call it. It's kind of a test mission to test out this new system, the SLS, the Space Launch System, and the Orion space capsule. It's the first time we've had humans flying in it and in space. And so they're testing things out to see if it works well. And if all goes well in future subsequent missions, they will actually land on the moon. The hope is that the next mission, they'll test the lander. So it's going to be a few years away, but that's the plan. So they're testing all, you know, the life support, the communication, The radiation shielding, which is obviously a big deal. So their hope is that everything, all the data they get, they're able to, you know, better prepare for the next missions. And those next missions will set up the space program to build what they're thinking of as a kind of a moon base that will be kind of a gateway to going farther and farther into the solar system. Now, this is all assuming that Jesus doesn't return, you know, in the next, I mean, it, you know, we keep exploring, just assuming that he's gonna arrive at some point. And maybe, I like this idea, maybe when he does return, he'll have us continue to explore. I mean, he made the universe. Why wouldn't we continue to explore? And so this mission is to, you know, kind of prep that, you know, the hardware, basically the system for, further moon, projects, getting stuff on the moon. Now, I will say the idea of getting people to Mars, we talk about it as if it's just going to be easy and it's just like the next step, but it's not the next first step. It's the next thousand steps, because there's so many things to solve for going to Mars that we just don't quite have cracked yet. We haven't gone anything like that far. So, but the moon is a staging for that. And so that's part of the mission here, is to have a more long-term presence farther away than the International Space Station. The International Space Station is in low Earth orbit, of course, and so the moon is a next step, and it's a much harder next step. It is much more difficult. So that's kind of the basics. And again, you may be thinking, well, what does this have to do with faith? Well, there's actually a number of Christian interest, I'll call them story points, with this mission, but just the space missions in general. And so the astronaut that's on this mission that I want to focus on is a guy named Victor Glover. Now, he was the first black man to go to the International Space Station. He'll also be the first to visit the moon. You know, it's not going to step foot on the moon in this mission, but first to visit the moon. And this guy is, he's incredibly impressive on a lot of fronts. But the thing that's interesting to me, I mean, all astronauts are the best of the best, right? I mean, they are cream of the crop. We send our absolute best into space. But Glover is in particular interest to me because of his faith. He's actually an outspoken Christian, and he's made some very faith-based comments during this mission and also while he was on the International Space Station. And so I just want to talk about some of those, because I know that for a lot of people, you know, they hear about space flight and sciencey related stuff, and they think it's all just godless people, you know, people that are atheists. And but Victor Glover and a number of others are they really stand against that. They show that that's not really the case. So in terms of Victor Glover, he's the pilot on this mission. And he is a long-term member of an evangelical church. He's been highly vocal about how, and this is a quote from him, that his career is fed by his faith. And, you know, for some, that may just feel like kind of generalized talk, like you hear sports athletes, you know, talking about their faith. It's all very general. But Victor is a bit more specific about some things. I've got a few quotes here that I want to share with you. In adapting a famous military phrase, he was recorded as kind of talking about the awe and the terror that you experience in space flight. And he said, in the military, there's a saying that there are no atheists in foxholes. There aren't any on top of rockets either, close quote. I like that because, I mean, he's acknowledging that, you know, the fear and also just the awe that you experience in space flight is it points you toward those more spiritual and eternal things that you're thinking about, partially, I'm assuming, because you're thinking about death. You're thinking about this thing very possibly could kill me. And I've heard, I watched a documentary a while back about from some astronauts who had been on the International Space Station. And they said something interesting. It was basically that when you see the Earth, there's kind of this overview phenomenon that happens for humans when you get into orbit and you see the Earth. It is a kind of religious experience. And even those who are not religious, there's something about it that has a religious nature to it. And so for those who are Christians to start off with, well, you can imagine what kind of experience they're having. But even those that aren't, it's it kind of becomes that. So Glover has said other things, though, that are much more specific. And by the way, one source said that Victor Glover has been a Sunday school teacher in his in his church for years. I don't know if he currently does. I don't think he currently does that, but I don't know. Well, he's not doing it right now, at least not this Sunday. But he's been a Sunday school teacher. And I love that idea because, like, if I had an astronaut for a Sunday school teacher, of course, we talk about the Bible, but I would have a bazillion questions about, you know, space flight and all that kind of thing. So that's kind of a neat angle. So he, and I don't know what the context for this quote is, but he was speaking at a church. He was speaking at a church in Texas, and he went past kind of that concept of like just spiritual awe in that last quote. And he said this, this is a direct quote. He said, quote, "We have a sin nature and we need Jesus. Jesus is that bridge that spans sin and gives us a chance of going to heaven." Close quote. So that's a direct quote from one of the guys that's in space. He believes in sin nature. He believes that we need Jesus. He believes that Jesus is the way that we're saved. It's interesting how he puts it. He says that Jesus is that bridge that spans sin and gives us a chance of going to heaven. I think I'm going to take a guess here. I think what he's saying is that apart from Jesus, you don't have a chance. I think that's the idea. Now, I doubt that Victor Glover is free grace. I would assume that he may lean a different way just because so many people do. And I believe he has a Church of Christ background. And so he may have a bit of a different perspective on, you know, the tenets of salvation, the terms of the gospel. But here's a guy who you know believes in Jesus and is committed to the Lord and talks about it, you know, talks about it publicly. Another data point, and I don't have a quote on this, but on the International Space Station, he did, I can't remember the number, I think it was something like 168 days on the International Space Station. It was a long time. And he specifically wanted to be able to do communion while he was there. And so he wanted to be able to continue his worship practices on the International Space Station. So that's an interesting idea that you probably hadn't thought of, is like there's almost called them missionaries. There's astronauts on the International Space Station, and when you have an astronaut who's religious, they're doing religious things on the International Space Station. And same with Same with this Artemis mission, because this mission actually spanned Easter. They were up during Easter, and so Glover was actually, he was asked something. I saw a video of, he was asked about that, about it being Easter, and he had a couple of comments, made mention of the earth being created and it being this place where we, you know, where we ought to have unity and things like that. And so, that was a pretty, you know, on the nose quote. There's another quote, which, I am not, for some reason, it's not coming up in my notes that are right in front of me. But he from space in a broadcast, talked about the greatest commandment, talked about Jesus. Here's another quote from him. Okay, this isn't the one I was just talking about, but this was what he said on Easter. I'm kind of scrolling through here. I got my notes kind of mixed up here. But here's what he said on Easter. He said, "In all this emptiness, you had this oasis, this beautiful place that we get to exist together. You're on a spaceship." And so he's talking about Earth here. He says, "You're on a spaceship called Earth that was created to give us a place to live." So not a deeply, so on the, you know, when he's on this, he knows he's speaking on behalf of NASA here. So he's being pretty cautious, I think, in what he's saying, but acknowledge that the Earth was created. I mean, that's nice. Kind of a nice nod. There's another quote that he has about, that was from a mission. I think it was, from this mission. Yeah, here it is. Okay. So this was, okay, this was on this mission during the Artemis, mission that they're on right now. And this was just before they were passing behind the far side of the moon. And that, like I said earlier, put them in range. I mean, put them in a place where they would have no communication for about 40 minutes with Earth. So they're just kind of like isolated. So here's what he said, quote, "As we get close to the nearest point of the moon and farthest point from Earth, I would like to remind you of one of the most important mysteries there on Earth, and that's love. Christ said in response to what was the greatest commandment, that it was to love God with all that you are. And he also, being a great teacher, said the second is equal to it, and that is to love your neighbor as yourself." And so I like that, because he's talking, there's two points there where he's talked about Jesus, you know, one from the mission, from a broadcast. And so, I mean, think about that, like how many millions of people, are seeing that, and it's a nod to both creation, in that earlier quote, but here to something that, what one of Jesus's teachings. I think it's really exciting. And, you know, the thing is that, like, this mission is a little bit unique because the entire thing, except for those 40 minutes, behind the moon, of course, they'll be recorded, but they won't have been live streamed, but everything else is being live streamed. And so this will live on, this quote will live on at this historic moment, you know, when they're about to pass behind the backside of the moon. That's the part that everybody wants to see in this mission. And here he is talking about Jesus, you know. So, now he's not obnoxious about it. It's not like he's, you know, he's just won't shut up and just continues to cram it down everybody's throat, but he kind of peppers in these little nods, these little notes that you can see that he's a person of faith. So in the broader sense, Victor Glover is obviously not the only Christian who has gone to space. We actually a lot of Christians have gone to space, but he's not the only vocal one, though. There's others that have been quite vocal, and I wanted to highlight a few. Now, I'm just going to tell you, I'm not doing this from memory or anything. I had to look these up. I wasn't aware of a lot of these. I knew some of these names, and you'll know some of these names, but Buzz Aldrin, you've probably heard of. He was on Apollo 11, and he was obviously very famous because he was the first to step on the moon. And so interesting thing about him, he was an elder at his church. And Aldrin took a private communion on the lunar module before stepping onto the moon. So there's an interesting thought that, like, before that moment that is so famous, he was in the lunar module doing communion. I mean, that's and in that communion, he read the words, he read Jesus's words in John 15:5 that says, "I am the vine, you are the branches," etc. Well, so that's like a piece of little hidden piece of history that that kind of rounds out maybe what you might be thinking about this lunar landing. And by the way, for those who are, you know, Christians, maybe lean toward fundamentalism, and also in addition to that, think that maybe the moon landings were fake. Let's remember the kind of character of the person who has the title of the person, the first person who walked on the moon. He was a Christian and he was doing communion right before he did that. Is that the type of person that would be involved in a conspiracy to fool the world? Well, I don't know. That says something to me that I think I would lean towards thinking, well, he's probably a very honest person, and that wouldn't be the type of person you'd want to get to, you know, enact a conspiracy. So clearly, I think we really walked on the moon. I don't think that was a conspiracy. I think that's a ridiculous notion. Here's another who is a vocal Christian, a guy named James Irwin. Have you ever heard of him? He was on Apollo 15. So after Apollo 11, there were multiple more Apollo missions where we sent more people to the moon, of course. I mean, they weren't as famous, obviously, but Apollo 16, he walked on the moon. But later, he realized that his career had become an idol to him, and he had a dramatic, you know, like, born-again experience in, I'm reading here, a born-again experience in 1978, and he became one of the most vocal evangelical Christians from the Apollo era. So that's interesting. That makes me want to look him up and see what he was about. I didn't remember him. John Glenn, here's another name that you probably recognize. He was Mercury 7. He was the first American to orbit Earth. He famously stated, "To look out at this kind of creation out here and not believe in God is to me impossible," close quote. Like that. That's that kind of that concept of, like, it's just hard to be atheist when you have that overview phenomenon, you know, when you see the Earth from up high. Here's another, Rick Hubbard on Columbia STS-107. So he was the commander on the Columbia mission that exploded. I don't know if you remember that, but it was ill-fated. It was terrible. Astronauts died. I can't remember if it was, I think it was eight. I think it carried eight on that mission. He was famously vocal about his faith. He led worship in space. There's a cool idea. You know, very few people have gotten to be in a worship service in space. So he led worship in space, and he left behind video devotionals for his kids before he died during that reentry accident of the Columbia. So there's a, and this is interesting. I mean, like, he was the commander of the, you know, of the mission. And so he had a lot of influence even just on that crew. And so the idea of him doing faith things, you know, is that not a different image than you have of space flight? I mean, like, when the broadcasts come out, it kind of gets scrubbed, right? I mean, it's broadcasting to the world, and they try to, you know, they try to keep it sort of neutral religiously, but it's interesting to think about, like, personally, what is happening with these folks that, you know, are experiencing, you know, very possible death Well, you wouldn't want to deprive astronauts who are facing potential death, you know, very dangerous missions. You wouldn't want to deprive them of their faith practices. And so, so it's just interesting to think. It's easy to just assume that none of that happens while they're up there, but it is. Another is Jeffrey Williams. He was on the ISS, the International Space Station. He spent 534 days in space. Now, I don't believe he spent those days consecutively in space. I think he did a few missions. I'd have to look that up. I'm not sure how many. The longest that anyone spent in space, at least the last time I checked, was about a year, and it was an astronaut by the last name Kelly. Can't recall his first name, but it's a little over a year, a little under a year, something like that. But that's pretty crazy. Think about you spending a year in you know, no gravity. Anyway, Jeffrey Williams, 534 days in space, and wrote a book titled "The Works of His Hands: A View of God's Creation from Space." It explicitly details how his scientific work as an astronaut reinforced his biblical worldview. Oh, that's cool. That'd be an interesting book to read. I haven't read that, so I'm not endorsing it, but that might be a neat one to try. Jeffrey Williams was his name. Another Christian religious, but not evangelical, was Michael Hopkins on the ISS. It was Catholic. Hopkins received special permission to bring a pikes containing the Eucharist to the International Space Station, taking communion weekly in orbit. Apparently, Victor Glover, who we talked about, did a similar thing and was doing communion on the International Space Station when he was there. So I don't know. It's just a different image to me, and it's valuable to remember that this thing that we're doing in space has real people who have real faith. Now, no doubt there are non-Christian astronauts, and there may be even atheist astronauts, but there are definitely Christians who are right up there in the middle of it. It'd be interesting to actually ask, are there any, I'll type this in right now, are there any atheist astronauts? Because, I mean, as Victor Glover said, it probably is kind of hard to not have some type of at least pseudo, you know, religious experience. I wrote a book a while back that I've talked about a lot. It's called Missionary to Mars. It's fiction, but it's kind of a love letter to my interest in space exploration, but also it's a faith-based story. Of course, it's a Christian sci-fi book. And one of my premises was that, you know, in this hypothetical fictional future, that as the solar system gets colonized, if that's going to happen, I don't know if it'll happen, but if it did, there's kind of this assumption that aren't a lot of the scientists that would go out atheist? Well, I'm actually thinking maybe that's not as reasonable. Maybe it's not so reasonable to think that those that are heading out into space are atheists so much. Okay, let's see. I looked up, have there been any atheist astronauts? It says, yes, there have been several. Here are a few notable examples. German Titov from the Soviet Union. Okay, that tracks. I mean, Soviet Union was kind of trying to enforce atheism. Christer Fuglesang was a Swedish physicist and European Space Agency astronaut who flew on two space shuttle missions. He's a prominent member of Swedish Skeptics Association, openly identifies as an atheist. Okay, so, but Swedish, so not American, but, I mean, astronaut, I suppose. Oh, European Space Station. I mean, it's European Space Agency. So, let's see, Rusty Schwerkart, the American astronaut who flew on Apollo 9, was an atheist during his selection, though he officially listed no religion preference at the time to avoid controversy. Ah, okay, that's interesting. So he was an atheist. I wonder whatever happened to him if he became a believer. That'd be interesting to find out. So he was on Apollo 9. That was Apollo 9. Was that one of the orbital missions? I can't remember. 11 was where they first landed on the moon. But let's see. Did Rusty become a believer later? Let's find out. Because it's interesting to me to think, like, there's an experiment. You have an atheist who goes to space. Did the experience shift his thinking? You know, I mean, because you can imagine how it might to see things from such a view. Let's see. Okay, it says that Rusty experienced a profound spiritual shift during his spacewalk. It wasn't a conversion to traditional Christianity. Instead, he embraced transcendental meditation and a broader cosmic spirituality focused on the interconnectedness of the universe and what was later termed the overview effect. Well, yeah, there's that thing I was talking about. Okay, so that's interesting. This is a valuable thing to note, is that it's not a given that someone turns to Jesus just because they go to space. I mean, and I don't think anybody was saying that. I don't think anybody's implying that. He had an experience that led him probably to search for something deeper. And I guess what he found was, well, it wasn't Jesus, I suppose. Oh, Charlie Duke is another. My notes left him off. Or did I talk about him? He became a born again. Let's see. Okay, so with Charlie Duke, let me see. No, I did talk about him. Yeah, he had a born again experience in 78. Yeah, I talked about him. So he, let's find out more about what he did. What did Charlie Duke do in terms of the faith? So, I know. So basically, like, this is a guided Google session by now, right? I'm just kind of like Googling things. Actually, I'm using Google's AI and search feature. So it's sort of a hybrid here. But so Charlie Duke's story is actually the perfect counterpoint to the idea that going to space automatically makes you spiritual. While he is one of the most vocal Christian astronauts today, his faith journey happened after he walked on the moon, not during it. Hey, there you go. Okay. So that's a good example. That's a good point, that he was not a person of, well, was he a believer at all then? Let's see. Here is what he actually did regarding his faith. The idol of career. Duke admits that during the Apollo 16 mission, so that was in 72, his career was his god, little g, but his god. After returning from the moon, he experienced a severe sense of emptiness and the near collapse of his marriage. The moonwalk didn't give him lasting peace. It left him asking, now what? Oh, I bet so. Can you imagine, like, if you were an astronaut, especially in the Apollo era where, you know, everybody is gearing up to go to the moon for, you know, a number of years. And then, I don't know if you have this, but like for me, after I finish a big project, I have this emotional dip afterward. And I think it's because I'm like getting so much enjoyment from the process. And then when it craters after that, it can be an emotionally low point. Well, I can't imagine the kind of emotional low point that these guys probably experience when they are done with their moon career, you know, or maybe even just done with their space career. Because there's nothing, you know, because at some point, by the way, they dose out of the amount of radiation that, I mean, like when you go into space, especially past low Earth orbit, you're getting cosmic radiation, you're getting radiation poisoning. And it's much higher when you go to the moon. And so you're not going to do like a bunch of moon missions. And rather than they just don't have a bunch of moon missions, but even if they did, there's a limited amount that you're going to be going in space. And so they track their lifetime dosage. And at some point you're done. You know, they're just like, you can't go to space anymore. You've had the maximum allowable dose. And it has something to do with 3% increase in risk for cancer or something. They've calculated it out, and that's just what NASA's decided the risk assessment that they'll allow, basically. What am I talking about? Okay, so anyway, at some point, astronauts just, they're done. They just have to be done. They're not going to get any more missions. They're past their window. And I can't imagine the kind of emotional dip that you'd experience at that point. And so I guess for Charlie Duke, maybe he was feeling that, you know, kind of that now what sort of experience. So in 1978, his wife Dottie became a Christian. Oh, okay. She became a Christian in 76. So 2 years before Charlie did. Interesting. It says his wife Dottie became a Christian first in 1976, which stabilized their marriage. I guess their marriage was struggling. I think I read that previously. 2 years later in 1978, Duke attended a Bible study and gave his life to Christ. Ooh, that's interesting. I wonder where that was. Let's see. Duke's Ministry for Christ. He eventually founded a ministry, traveling globally to speak about his faith and ministering in prisons, churches, and overseas. Oh, dude, that's rad. So he goes to space. Well, he's kind of like the space missionary. I should study this guy more. I don't know much about this guy. I've heard his name, but I don't know much about this guy. He eventually founded a ministry traveling globally to... Okay, I read that already. Yeah, okay, so he traveled, spoke the core message. His most famous speaking point directly challenges the space awe narrative. He frequently says, "My walk on the moon lasted 3 days, but my walk with God will last forever." Oh, that's cool. Oh, I like this guy. I need to find out more about this guy. Hey, if you guys know anything about Charlie Duke, send me a message. I'd like to hear what you know about him. I'm not endorsing the guy. I don't know what his theology was. I don't know anything about him, but just the idea that basically after walking on the moon, he gave his life to ministry. I mean, that's pretty cool. It makes it sound like here that the evidence that kind of won him over was how it changed his marriage, that his marriage shifted and maybe that made him more open. I'd like to know what the Bible study was. What was the Bible study that he went to? So, man, you just think about the experiences he had in his life. You would think that the guy that walks on the moon, the greatest single experience in his life would be walking on the moon. And maybe physically it was, right? But the idea that he would give his life to not talk about walking on the moon so much as to talk about Jesus. I'm sure he talked about walking on the moon when he would speak. How do you not bring that up? Like, oh, I went and spoke to a group and I forgot to mention that, hey, I'm one of the very few people that has been on the moon. Okay, so the Bible study, he didn't name a specific theological curriculum or famous study series. He actually gave his life to Christ in April 1978 after attending a weekend Bible study hosted at a local tennis club in New Braunfels, Texas. Oh, cool. That's, you know, a few hours away from us. But his wife, Dottie, had become a Christian a few years prior. Yeah, we saw that through a program at their church called Faith Alive. Watching her change is what eventually led him to that tennis club study, where he finally prayed in the front seat of his car afterward to surrender his life. How cool. So this is using, you know, kind of, you know, like surrender his life and give his life to Christ is not, those are not quite free grace terms, but I'm just using Google here to try to piece this together. Well, anyway, that's okay. That was kind of an interesting. So from Victor Glover to other astronauts to Charlie Duke, we kind of landed on Charlie Duke. I wish I would have known up front to study Charlie Duke a little bit more, because I would have had more notes on him and maybe we could have made it more about him, but maybe I'll study him. And if I find out something interesting, I'll circle back. Maybe we can do another one of these. Hey, if you like science-related podcasts, by the way, I'm not a scientist. I'm just kind of an enthusiast. I like this sort of stuff. But if you like science-related content from a Christian perspective, let us know. Maybe we could find more people that are actually qualified to talk about this stuff. An enthusiast is fine, but it'd be cool to actually, maybe I could interview some scientists or something who are believers. I'm a big fan of, rather than running from science, you know, from the sciences and trying to encourage people to ignore the sciences or avoid them. I'm a big fan of, you know, just focusing on how faith integrates into science and how science integrates into faith. I mean, if all truth is God's truth and all creation is God's creation and science is the study of said creation, then we're studying what God did, whether some motivated parties admit it or not, it's what's going on. And so the open heart and the open mind who studies creation, I think that leads them to God. The people who study creation and stubbornly refuse to acknowledge a creator, I think what's going on is they're just not open-minded. They're not open-hearted. Sort of like, maybe like Charlie Duke and that other astronaut whom I can't remember his name now, who had, you know, space experiences, but it didn't immediately lead them to Christ. Of course, who's to say that walking on the moon didn't play a huge part in Charlie Duke actually coming to Christ eventually? I don't know. But anyway, I just think the science and faith can be integrated. And for me, it doesn't feel difficult. You know, it doesn't feel difficult. I think a lot of it has to do with being flexible on certain subjects that aren't my main thing. You know, like I'm pretty flexible when it comes to science. What I'm not flexible on is just the fact that God did it. You know, whatever it is, God did it. He left, you know, his fingerprint on creation, but he sent his son, and his son coming to earth, Jesus coming to earth and corroborating all of these things is really why we Christians trust it. You know, I mean, like when you think about like, why do we trust the book of Genesis? Well, we trust the book of Genesis because Jesus quoted from it and he acknowledged its veracity, you know? And so I trust the Old Testament because Jesus gave it validity. If he didn't, I wouldn't think much about the Old Testament, you know, but so for a Christian, that's where I'm coming from, is like what I'm not flexible on is Jesus is at the center of all of it. And I am totally willing to integrate, you know, any kind of sciences that fit into the Jesus-centric worldview. You know, Jesus is the center, and sciences that can fit into that are just fine, you know. And so for me, the science is the flexible part. So if the current theory is XYZ about, you know, the whatever, the biosphere, you know, theory of whatever, fine, that's okay, as long as it fits with Jesus, as long as he's the center. And, you know, but if the two come in conflict, this is where I think a lot of people get kind of backwards. If the two come in conflict, it's not Jesus that you jettison. It's the flexible, you know, the flexible science idea that you're toying with. And part of the reason for that is that most of the scientific theories and even laws that we are, that we acknowledge, they're much, much younger. They are within 100 years old, many of them, some 300 or 400 years old, some of the more math oriented, you know, laws of physics, maybe 300 or 400 years old. And some things much, you know, much older, but most of these scientific theories are very young, and they shift around and they change. And so it's kind of like, don't get exceedingly uptight if, you know, there's a new theory that feels like it challenges. These theories come and go. And ultimately, I'm just confident that the more truth we gain, even through the sciences, the more it points to the Lord, the more it points to a creator, the more it points to Jesus. And so I keep my ear to the ground on these things, and I don't encounter things that I think contradict God as the creator. You know, so it's just, that's where I stand on it. I feel really confident. and so I guess that's a piece of what I want. That's a piece of what I want to help people with. It's not the main thing for me, obviously, but I have noticed that a lot of times when people struggle with the faith, one of the things they mention is that they came from a very rigid kind of anti-science background. And I don't really care all that much how interested people are in science. What I care about is how interested they are in Jesus. But if coming from a really rigid anti-science background and then later rejecting Jesus, if that becomes a repeated pattern, well, then I want to try to rethink that thing, that whole thing of saying, like, if people who are coming out of an anti-science background then later are rejecting Jesus in large numbers, let's re-engineer that. There's something that's not working right. Because I don't really care if people, what people's theories on different scientific things are. I mean, I have an opinion and I can speak passionately about it, but I don't care a whole lot about that. What I care about is that people cling to Jesus, you know, that they hold on to Jesus. And so, so anyway, I'm just kind of rambling, but I often ramble, so I guess that's okay. So that's my thoughts on spaceflight. So if you are wanting to see anything from this mission, this Artemis II mission, you ought to look it up. It's live streaming. You can see the launch. The rocket is absolutely massive. It's a skyscraper. I mean, it's a skyscraper with an exploding tailpipe, you know, and when it flies, I mean, it must shake the ground. I've never seen a rocket launch. I want to go see one, but man, it must be like canned thunder. So check it out. And know that at least one of those, at least the mission pilot is a strong believer. He's someone who loves the Lord and is vocal about it. And the others might be believers too, but I couldn't find much information on what their faith, you know, what their faith is. So that's what I'll do for the episode today. Thanks for listening. And I know it's a unique one, but hopefully it was enjoyable. All right. We will talk to you later.